on ABC Radio.
This is The Big Fish
with Scott Levi.
Ahoy there. Welcome aboard a cracking episode of The Fish this morning. Craig McGill talks about one of the most underrated fish in the sea, a great eating fish, abundant, sustainable, and right at our doorstep for most of us here on the East Coast. We're also off for a fishing adventure to Western Australia with Stinker. We've tracked him down after his trip to Kalbarri, and he's been after the lobsters over there, or the crayfish, as they call them. And we're off to Babinda as well, a brilliant place in the rainforest up past Innisfail, the far north Queensland coast where the rainforest meets the sea, with Kimmy Adams, who's a shore-based fisher in that part of the world. And we'll talk about the esteemed, rare, mighty sports fish, the jungle perch. It's all coming up on The Big Fish. It's The Big Fish, and in the depths of winter in New South Wales, for our estuary fishers, there's one fish that comes on. And I'm not talking about the ludric, which we've spoken about a lot on this program, one of my favourites, but another favourite, and a very underrated fish, particularly for its eating quality, the leather jacket. The fan belly and the yellowfin leather jackets are on in big numbers in my local estuary in Sydney Harbour, in Lake Macquarie, around the seagrasses, around the kelp beds. They are terrific fish to catch and terrific on the chew. And Craig McGill knows all about them because he's a bread and butter fisher person as well. Good morning, Craig.
I am. Good day, mate.
One of your regulars, and it's funny, the famous people that you've taken on board years ago was Tetsuya, the five-star Michelin-hatted chef who was the talk of Sydney when he first arrived. I mean, he revolutionised fusion dining, didn't he, really? He was one of the greatest chefs in Sydney history. And he said to me, leather jacket, steamed with a bit of ginger and fresh ginger and garlic, better than fugu, without the risk of death. Which I thought was terrific.
That's a real upside, I reckon.
Yes, I think so. And they reckon the fugu or the puffer fish that people eat in Japan. I don't know if you've done it, but a mate of mine did, and he said he got a slight tingling on the lips with just a little bit of the neurotoxin was still left in, which the master chefs play this game of Russian roulette with their diners. And Tetsuya, the great Japanese chef, said, just have a yellow fin or a fan belly leather jacket and forget about the risk of poisoning. I thought that was great. But the big yellowfin ones are probably the ones you encounter more. The fan bellies are great too, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's the two main types that we get in the harbour are the six spine. You know, the ones with the sharp sort of horns down near their tail. So we get them and we get the fan belly. But we get a big variety of leather jackets in the harbour. We get the Chinaman jacket. We get a massive tropical thing called a unicorn jacket. Not kidding, it grows to a metre, this thing. Massive thing. We don't see them every year, but when we get some warm water every now and then, we get an interesting one called a mosaic jacket, which is a big round sort of John Dory-looking thing with big blotches on it. And we get a whole heap of other ones too. Every now and then you'll pull up a leather jacket that you've never even seen before. I don't know how many species of them that there actually are, but there's certainly a lot of them in the harbour.
So I'm fascinated. I mean, the two that I catch regularly, and they're on at the moment, that's what we're talking about, the six spine, which has got those rows of sharp things right near their tail. They're also called a yellow fin because they've got a yellow tail and got a lovely blue outline when you first catch them, neon blue, and the one big spine. And then the other one you've got is a fan belly with this great big flap that sits down underneath them, and that just comes off. You just pull the skin off. But this unicorn leather jacket, I mean, these ones are only, your biggest one would be, I don't know, 30 centimetres. I guess 35 centimetres is a big one, maybe 40. But they'd have to have teeth like tin snips, wouldn't they, if they're that big?
Oh, they'll bite straight through your kingy hooks because we get them attacking our kingfish baits. They love squid, as do most leather jackets. But these big unicorn ones, they come in. They They're quite a sort of pelagic leather jacket. They move around in groups. There'll be a dozen of them together, and they're quite often up near the surface. They're not like your typical leather jackets down the bottom near the pylons and the reefs. These fellas come right up, and you'll see them around the marker buoys, and they'll come right up to the surface and annihilate your squid baits that you've got out for kingies. But I've had them bite right through kingy hooks, you know, and I'm using pretty heavy gauge hooks, so it's not something you'd want to get your finger
near. Wow. Yeah, that's a set of dentures. I remember I was fishing offshore with a fellow when I was down on the south coast, and he really was just learning the trade, and I'm not a great offshore fisher either. I'm much more at home in the estuary, but we were chasing snapper, and we caught a couple of really big Chinaman leather jacket, and he said, "Oh, throw that back, it's poisonous." I said, "Don't be ridiculous." I said, "They're fantastic to eat. You try that, they're great." And then we went in and drifted for flathead on the sand grounds and got some nice flathead and sort of showed him a few things. So, you know, and he really rated it. I said, "No, they're not poisonous. They're lovely to eat. If you look after it and take the skin off, put it in the esky, you'll really enjoy that. And they'll bite through your lower gauge hooks as well, the big. But they're mainly offshore. Do they come into Sydney Harbour as well?
The striped ones, the Chinaman leather jacket, they're sort of black and
the ones you get out on the reef mainly.
Yeah, every now and then we'll get a big one of them, like big enough to keep and eat. But mostly the ones we get in the harbour are sort of only as long as your hand, and they come in plague proportions.
And bite everyone off, yeah.
Oh, I tell you, when they're at their worst, you'll put down four kingy baits, and if they just take your bait, you're lucky. A lot of the time they'll bite. You know when you I use that colour change, I think they call it depth change line, where it changes colour.
The braid, yeah.
On the colour change, they'll bite that bit. They'll nip at it. They'll think it's something to eat, and they'll bite it. When they're really bad, you'll pull your line up, and there's just no, they've taken your whole rig off.
Well, they'll bite at the swivels too, won't they? They'll bite at the swivels and the leads. And what about those unicorn leather jackets, the ones up to a metre? Are they're edible too, aren't they?
They're edible, and so are the mosaic jackets, and they're all very good eating. I'd rate leather jacket up in my top three fish, I think.
Well, they're on in droves at the moment, but they're not a fish that a lot of people target. And interesting catching those smaller ones in the estuaries, like the six spine or the yellowfin and the fan belly. The secret is we used to always use hand line over the weed beds in Lake Macquarie, but the secret is to gently keep lifting, getting it down to where they are, because they like to be near the bottom, unlike those big pelagic ones that come up in swarms. And if you're just lifting, because they suck the bait in, and they'll suck a little bit of prawn, so put a little bit of prawn on a little long shanked hook, and if they get it too far down, they'll bite you off. So you've got to, and then you just feel that resistance. You don't feel a bite, you just all of a sudden, and that's when you strike. And
they've got a very subtle bite, and like you say, you've sort of got to really be on the ball with them, and hand lines probably is one of the best way to go, because you really need that sensitivity. But people write them off, but they're actually a really good fighting fish too. You get them on light brim gear around the pylons, and they're actually a sensational fighting fish. They respond to burley, and they do seem to really like the prawn baits, a bit of peeled prawn, but they're big on squid too. They really love the squid baits, which are probably better than prawns because they stay on the hook a lot better. But I was just thinking of something else my grandfather used to tell me. When he was a kid, he used to catch the six spines off the rocks. And just for a game, they used to bring wine corks down with them, and they'd stick them on the spines of the leather jackets. And then they'd put them in the rock pools. This is where they were keeping them alive for the day in the rock pools. And they'd sit them in the rock pools and play submarines with them. He said that the leather jackets would dive down, and then when they got tired of fighting the cork, they'd pop back up to the surface. And then at the end of the day, they'd collect them up and take them home and eat them.
It's The Big Fish with Craig McGill. And at this time of year, we talk about accessible fishing, safe fishing, and catch them from the shore as well, but probably more so from a boat, really. You need that sort of right habitat. The big Posidonia beds in Lake Macquarie are excellent places to catch as many as you like, all around Sydney Harbour, where there's kelp and rock and weed. They live in that habitat because they sort of, their strategy for protection other than having a huge spine on their head and a skin that's, you know, like heavy grit sandpaper, is they just sit silently in the weeds, don't they? So that's where you'll catch them. And around the wharves too, when there's, I guess that's the best place to catch them from land base. Look around all of the local jetties and wharves and find one with lots of weed around it, and then burly up and the leather jackets will come out of that weed, the growth on the pylons.
Yeah, absolutely. The jetties, when I was a kid, we used to get a ferry pass and then just jump around the lower harbour jetties all day, go from one to another just fishing for leather jackets. So if you're looking for, you know, somewhere to take the kids, and the good thing too about them for the kids is that they're reliable. So the kids aren't going to be bored, you know, oh, when are we going to catch something? And they're quite abundant. They're easy to catch. You don't need complicated or expensive rigs to catch them, and they're very accessible.
Yeah, and great eating, and you know, when you've had a session cleaning them, you just off with the head behind the spine, and the gut cavity comes out clean as a whistle, and then you grab the skin and you pull back, and at the end of a session cleaning them, your hands are all sandpapered, your fingers are all, you've got no fingerprints left if you wanted to go and rob a jewelry store. Don't do that either. It's the Big Fish with Craig McGill. We're talking leather jacket and really bread and butter fish, a forgotten fish really that's in great numbers at this time of year. I wonder why they're so plentiful at this time of year, or is it just that we target them in winter like Ludric?
Yeah, I think it's just that we target them, you know, in summertime we're chasing our kingies and our whiting and, you know, all those sort of summer fish. And then in winter, you're sort of looking for something to, like you said, the Ludric and the leather jackets to. And I think that's it, because I'm quite sure I've fished for them in summer when I was a kid, and they were equally as abundant back then. And the other thing too that we should mention when you're fishing for jackets is that you pick up all sorts of other stuff as well. You're quite likely to pick up a bream. We used to fish out near Quarantine around the rocks for them there. We used to get some quite big blue mowong as well while we were chasing the jackets, and all sorts of other fish. So, you know, there's a lot of variety there.
And look, watch your knife. Don't try use a good filleting knife. Just get through the head and then pull the skin off with your fingers and the whole jacket will come off in one piece. They're very, very easy to clean. No bones and just delectable. One good way to do them is just to put them in a steamer, a bit of fresh ginger and garlic, and job done. You know, so the flesh will just fall off the bone. They're absolutely absolutely beautiful and easy to target. And, yeah, squid's a good tip, because the little tiny, and you just want a little tiny piece of bait, like a little tiny strip or a little blob of prawn. You don't want too much on the end of a long shanked hook. And kids are good at catching them because they're always moving the bait, and they'll hook them because they suck it in. So kids are good at catching them. And great eating.
Yeah, great eating. And I'll tell you something else too about them. You know, everybody thinks they're a peaceful sort of fish that's not too aggressive. I tell you what, I've had leather jackets in my live bait tank, and I've had squid in there as well. I remember one day I went to my live bait tank, and there's this absolutely bloated leather jacket. He's attacked one of my squid, and not only did he just eat the squid, when he got full, he started spitting bits out, because in the bottom of the tank, there was just dozens of pieces, you know, little bite-sized chunks of squid at the bottom. So he's got his belly full, and then he kept eating and spat them out onto the floor.
They're voracious.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we hear through the grapevine that your favourite fish is on, and this is from small fish to giant fish. I believe that the big, should we tell people this? The big kings have moved in.
Yeah, we've got a pretty good run. They're a little bit late this year. Normally we get those big winter kings in June, but they've come in quite late. The water temp was very slow to cool down this year. We still had 20 degrees at the heads in July, which is, you know, unheard of, really. So they're obviously working on the currents and the temperature, but we've had them move into the harbour, and there is some big fish out there. I'm talking fish up to 1.20 meters, and quite good numbers of them too. So, you know, it's just a matter of getting your squid which there's plenty of at the moment, arrow squid, calamari, and cuttlefish, small cuttlefish, and just fishing around those harbour spots, you know, the headlands, the wrecks, the reefs. And yeah, there's some very good fish to be had out there at the moment.
Great to hear. And one thing I remembered about leather jacket too, and this is often how you'll catch them as well, you'll be fishing and you'll be getting baited and not getting a bite, not feeling a bite. And yeah. then you'll say, hello, this is what's going on. That's another tip if they've moved around when you're bait fishing as well. It's the big fish with Craig McGill. And you like live baiting for those big kings. Are there any other ways to get them?
Look, you can get yellowtail. They're not as good as the squid, but they will eat them. Especially if they're fired up. We've had a few days where they've just been going crazy out there, and even getting them on lures when they're like that. But, you know, really put the effort in for the squid. If you don't get the squid, then fall back on, you know, maybe yakkers, slimies if you can get them.
And what's your theory for them coming in at this time of year?
That's pretty weird, actually, because, you know, we sort of consider kings as a warm water fish, but, you know, more and more I'm starting to think that they quite like the cold water, actually. We've got about 16 up the back now, and they're swimming around in that, and they're still feeding quite actively. Although I will say at this time of year, I don't think they feed as often as they do in summer when the water's sort of up around that, you know, 23, 24 degrees. You'll get some really good days, but then you'll get some quiet days as well. So I think they're having a bit of a break. Their metabolism slows down a bit then. But I've just got a theory, and it's just my personal theory, that they're pre-spawning up there. I think they go out in spring. They'll go out shortly, and they'll go out, you know, wide wherever they spawn offshore. I think they're pre-spawning like trout do, because you see a lot of rubs on them, you know, where they sort of fight and spar with each other and rub on each other, and you'll see these red patches on the body, and I've just got a suspicion that that's what they're doing.
Wow, that's interesting. They're congregating, getting ready to go, sort of maybe the pecking order, like the rut. That's fascinating. And yeah. the ones that you catch at this time of year with cooler water, are they less susceptible to the mushy fish syndrome? You haven't had any trouble with that?
I hate to have to say it, but we got three good ones with some customers of mine a few weeks back, and we kept one, and we shared that. So it was a big fish. So, you know, we each took home a bit of fish, and unfortunately it did have the mush, which, you know, I would have thought by this time of year, that sort of would have been clear now, but it's becoming a big problem in Sydney now. I've seen a few Facebook posts from some of the chefs, and just saying how much of a problem it is.
Yeah, look, it may get to the stage where we just have to let them go, because, unless we get that test to say we can take a little sample and know straight away that fish is no good. I don't know what to do, because it's tragic to waste such a beautiful big fish.
It is, yeah. If we could come up with some sort of test, I don't know whether it'd be a probe or I mean, I know when the chefs go to the market, they'll do a little test. They'll take a little core sample out of the kingy, and they'll heat it with a cigarette lighter. They'll actually cook it on the spot and just see if it's okay. But you can't, you know, obviously you can't do that out on the boat.
No, not with a live fish. You're gonna let go. Live fish. No. It's a real problem. Anyway, we've spoken to the scientists who identified this, so hopefully they're working on a test where we can let those fish go that have the parasite, the mushy fish parasite.
Another interesting thing about that is that we've had a lot of bonito this season that have had the mush, and I've never seen that before.
Oh, that's worrying, isn't it? That's worrying. Oh, dear. Anyway, it's a changing world, but the leather jackets don't get mushy. The one thing they do get, a lot of them, are those bugs.
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't mention that.
And they
that.
Don't get in the throat like they do with the silver trevally, and, you know, they don't replace the tongue like they do with the big yakkers. They get in the guts, and their claws come out through the side of the belly.
They're just disgusting. They're just the thing of nightmares, aren't they?
Yeah,
you know, if
I hate
them. You're going to make a sci-fi movie, you'd base it around those things. They're just hideous. They burrow through the side, and they sort of look like the ones that the yakkers get on the tongue, but much bigger. You know, they're as big as your thumb.
You'll get a lot of those in leather jacket. Must be something to do with the way they feed. They eat the spawn of these things. And, oh, yeah, I hate those things. So I have nightmares about those. But they don't affect the fish, in the eating quality of the fish. You know, you just put them on the tip of the knife and throw them away with the guts.
I'm not sure what I'd choose. If I had the choice of having my tongue eaten off and being replaced with a parasite, or a parasite burrowing through my side into my gut cavity, I'm not quite sure which one I'd choose out of those two.
Stuff of nightmares. It's Craig McGill, stuff of nightmares, but quite a common thing when catching leather jacket. And hopefully the kingies can, you know, we can catch a few that aren't mushy. That's a real problem. I'd probably just start letting them go.
Yeah, look, it could get to that stage. I know further up north, you know, Coffs Harbour and north to the Gold Coast, they basically don't bother keeping kingies up there just because it's such a big problem with them.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, the times we live in. Thanks for the update, Craig. Always good to talk to you. And tight lines, mate. Get into them.
Thanks, mate. See you soon.
Craig McGill there on The Big Fish. And one of our great listeners and regulars on the program too, Chris Franklin, has been working with his AI band to create a song for the fish. And it makes me blush a bit, but it's very nice, Chris. Thanks so much for doing it. We'll let you hear it. You may remember Chris was the innovator of Fish Vemba at his local school to engage the kids and using fishing to create a school community, a brilliant project, and lots of prizes for the kids and shared photos and intergenerational connection. They were teaming up with their grandparents and their aunties and uncles, and just a beautiful thing. A really keen fisho who was the principal of his local little school who used fishing to engage the kids in learning. So he's one of the best, and a pretty good fisho too, Chris. He's caught some big kingies in his time. We've got to go out again, but here's his song, a tribute to the big fish, which is very nice of you. Thank you, Chris Franklin, one of our regular big fish listeners. And he's got the copyright to this one too. He paid for the AI band.
Tune in for more stories on the big fish. Up at sunrise with the morning sky aglow, Scott Levi's at the helm, so away we go. The gulls are crying overhead, the water's coming alive, the coffee's hot, the tide is turning, and conversations thrive from the break of day. On the ocean blue, there's a salty tale waiting just for you. Hey! Yo ho ho, come gather round for a tasty dish. It's time to tune in for more stories on the big fish. Up at sunrise with the morning sky aglow, Scott Levi's at the helm, so away. Your lines out wide, every guest a hidden treasure waiting on the tide. Laughs and yawns and lessons too, Scott brings the best one straight to you. Yo ho ho, come gather round for a tasty dish. Tune your podcast into the big fish. From the first light shining on the rolling sea, with Scott Levi leading, that's the place to be. Yo ho, cast away, every angler has a wish, set sail each Saturday morning with the big fish.
Hey! That one had me doing a jig, a squid jig. Thank you, Chris Franklin, one of our big fish listeners. Coming up, Stinker has gone to sea for the first time since being shipwrecked off the wild coast of Kalbarri, and had a great adventure chasing the crayfish of Western Australia, where they're plentiful and tasty as well. Also coming up on The Big Fish, we head to Babinda and do a bit of jungle perch stalking through that beautiful rainforest in far north Queensland with a keen female land-based fisho.
get out of it. Bloody seagulls.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Here comes Stinker with his fishing tips. Some hot advice for your fishing trip. Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, Scott, how are you going?
Oh, great to catch up with you. I didn't know if we'd get you or not because you've been way up at Kalbarri having an adventure in Western Australia in the Wild West, but you're back in the civilization now. How did you go?
Yeah, fantastic. Had a most wonderful week. Myself and four friends met up in Perth a week ago, and then we jumped in two vehicles and headed off from Perth to Kalbarri, which is about 7 hours north of Perth. The drive is very unique because the vegetation and the sand dunes, like I know Stockton sand dunes just go and go and go, and the amount of sand there I've never seen so much. But if you go to a place like Llansillen, north of Perth, the sand just goes on and on, and it's real white. It's like purple. It just goes on and on. And then in the open fields, there are grass trees, millions of grass trees. It's just a unique experience to just travel. And then, of course, you're always hugging the coast and all the little, and Geraldton, of course. And it's an experience just getting there.
And what did you think of Kalbarri, Stinker? It's a bit of a surfing mecca too, isn't it?
Well, I'd only ever passed Kalbarri one time before when we were heading even further north. But so this time we were going to spend the entire week in Kalbarri. So my friend had organised a boat trip out lobstering. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting because my lobster season in Port Stephens is just starting. And so I thought I'd be interested to see how this all happens. So we jumped on board this boat. We went out through a dodgy old passage there through the reef, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. Anyway,
you've just survived one shipwreck, Stinker.
Yeah. I said, where did you leave those life jackets, mate? He said, oh, they're up the nose of the boat there. Oh, dear. Anyway, we got out there, and he had 12 traps, this bloke. He's a tour operator, so there are others on the boat as well. And so they lifted the traps, and they were smaller lobster. They're smaller than the ones that the East Coast lobster, well, it's an East Coast sort of crayfish. There are actually no lobsters in Australia, but they're all crayfish. But anyway, but they're beautiful, beautiful. So we were given, when we disembarked, we got 8 lobsters, which we took home and had for a meal that night. But it was a great experience, a really great experience. And then I looked at the way the lobster traps are made, and they're totally different, Scott. They're totally different. They're made of wood. They're a different design. They did say that the lobsters can go in to those traps and they can get out. And I thought, well, that's not much good. If you've got lobsters, they're all going to go in and get out. But see, the traps that we use over on the East Coast, they can't get out of them. But once they go in, they stay in there. But they also have trouble with octopus. Now, octopus can get in and out of a pinhole. They're quite a remarkable creature, an octopus, and they'll go into the lobster traps when the lobsters are in there, as they do on the East Coast, and they will feast on the lobster. Now, the interesting part of all of that is that they will wrap their tentacles around the lobster, and then with their teeth, their beak, they'll bite into the lobster, and then with their tentacles, they'll eat the lobster without having to crunch or anything. They just pull the meat out of the lobster and then they leave. So when you go to lift the lobster, He's perfect. You can't see anything wrong with it. But he's hollow. Hollow as a log.
He's had his gut sucked out.
Everything sucked out. Even the legs, you know, even the meat in the legs. I mean, it's a... And they're a big problem. Well, so he pulled up one trap that had this big octopus in there. Well, he was dispatched pretty quickly. And, of course, then you can have the octopus too. So, yeah, look, I really, really enjoyed it. But also, Scott, anyone who's listening here who rides surfboards, what a surf. I mean, I used to ride surfboards up at Kira and Greenbrown and Durambar up when I was growing up. But my surfing days are over, but I can still appreciate a good wave. And the left-handers at Kalbarri were magnificent. It's like it was in some sort of a surfing movie. And the weather was perfect. There were a few whales jumping up and down. So, look, I had such a good time.
Isn't that great? And the water looks spectacular up there as well, nice and warm for the surfers. And really interesting to see the difference between the lobsters you catch off your place and these ones. The bag limit's pretty generous too. I see the daily bag limit in WA for each fisher, and so you're all licensed on board that vessel as a lobster tour vessel. Allowed a bag limit of 8 rock lobsters or crayfish, which include no more than 4 tropical rock lobsters, and the maximum number of rock lobsters allowed on a single boat is 24, regardless of how many licensed fishers are on board. And in Western Australia, the maximum general possession limit for recreationally caught rock lobsters or crayfish are 24 per person, all species combined. So they're in good numbers up there with those sorts of bags.
Well, see, I can set one trap, and in one day I can catch 3 lobsters. That's the law. Whereas in WA, you can have 2 traps and catch 8 lobsters a day, and you can have an in possession of 24 lobsters. So if you go to a person's place, they've got 24 lobsters in the fridge illegally. So they're very more than fair. But then again, the lobsters really are smaller. The lobsters in WA are smaller than the ones over on the East Coast, but equally as tasty, because we had a big meal of the 8 lobsters that we had, and we had all cooked in all different ways with butter and garlic and a bit of chilli and a bit of this and a bit of that. And, we just had a... we had a great old time. But I couldn't help myself. I went down to the bait and tackle shop, and a young fella in there, Stephen, his name's Stephen. Well, is this kid fired up? He loves fishing. You know, they're an interesting people. There are some, and I'm sure we all know one, they are just totally consumed by fishing. And they don't necessarily catch them and eat them. Most of them seem to catch them and let them go, which was unheard of in my day. However, that's the way things are gone. Well, this Stephen, I sat down with him and I said, mate, I'm over here. I'm here to learn. Tell me what goes on here. And he said, I got a mangrove jack in the river the other day. It's the Murchison River. He said it was 7.5 kilo. I said, gee, you know.
Wow.
That's not a bad fish. And then they get mulloway, 20 kilo mulloway in the river. And the river's not all that big, really, in comparison to East States rivers. But and then outside, the mackerel. And they've got laws that are really restricting fishing now in WA, because there's been a target species over here called the jewfish. DHU fish were the most beautiful eating fish you could ever imagine, but it's sort of been, well, the scientist says it's been overfished. So the way to protect the snapper and jewfish is to close the fishery, which is what they've done, which has impacted on boat sales, I should think, and professional money-making opportunities and tackle shops. Yeah, but they're living through it. But, gee, it's harsh. It's a harsh decision.
It is tough, isn't it? And obviously poor management led to that happening, because you've got to be guided by the science and listen to the experts. If you're overfishing, well, it's got to be sustainable, hasn't it?
Well, the interesting thing, Scott, that's exactly how I feel. It should not have ever got to that stage. It should have been, the trend should have been picked up before it reached the stage that it has reached. But there's more to it. I don't know everything that's been involved in the decision-making process, so I probably haven't got a well-researched decision. But a lot of the fishers I met were sort of thought it was a bit harsh. But now, never mind. But, oh, look, it's not only Kalbarri, but there's places, Cervantes, all these little spots. I tell you what, I went to this place called Grey. Now, when you get a chance, check it out. It's called Grey Sustainable Village. Well, if you check that out, you're going to see something that you don't believe. Well, we went in there a couple of days ago to find out what it was all about. But rather than me go through the whole lot, they're basically squatters, and there's 120 sheds, tin shacks, right on the beach. Some of them are up on the sand dunes with magnificent views, but they're all squatters. The whole community, 120 houses, are all tin, bits of tin here and a bit of tin there, and it's a village. And my original intention was to go to the Abrolhos Islands, but my friend I was going with, he had some problems that we had to deal with, so we didn't go. We ended up going to Kalbarri instead. But if you look up the Abrolhos, it's just a massive lobster industry on the Abroloses. They call them crayfish over here, and that's what they are. But the salmon, the West Coast salmon, are monsters. They're monstrous big fish. And they've got all these other beautiful fish that we don't see over our side. Bulching, grouper and others. But then, of course, you go further north, which we have done too, up to Columbaroo, and the fishing up there is just extraordinary. Then the quality of eating fish, I mean, every fish you catch is welcome in the kitchen. There's no fish that I've ever caught or in WA that you wouldn't put in the kitchen. Some are better than others, of course, but I've loved it. I'm on my way home, and I'll sort of start working things out again back in Fingal Bay. But oh, gee, it's been great. I had 3 years over here from 1972. 72, 73 and 74. But to go back once a year now and see all my old friends and visit these places, it's just a joy.
Oh, it's great you're having a good time, Stinker, and we'll catch you when you get home full of lobster and full of life.
That's the way to go.
Catch you next time, mate.
Hooray, Scott.
The Big Fish with Scott Levi on ABC Radio.
Kimmy Adams at Babinda is very familiar with the Women's Recreational Fishing League. She's been involved heavily in Queensland with that, and also has another group called LAD, Lady Anglers Down Under. Good morning, Kimmy.
Hi, Scott.
Where's Babinda, for those who don't know? Because it's a fascinating place.
Yep, so Babinda is in far north Queensland, and we're about halfway between Cairns and Innisfail.
And you've got soaring mountains and lush rainforests and beautiful crystal clear rivers full of jungle perch and barramundi, and then you've got these magnificent beaches and close-in reef structure and islands. I mean, it's a fishing mecca, isn't it?
Yes, we're definitely spoilt for choice up here, that's for sure.
And take us through some of your fishing and what you like to do, because you've obviously also got to watch out for those big handbags with teeth and legs.
We do indeed. I've actually had a pretty close encounter with one of those, but I'm alive to tell the story. Yeah, no, I love targeting our little Aussie natives, in particular jungle perch, sooty grunter. Just the places that they take you is just spectacular. And unless you're, you know, a hiker, I think fishos are probably, you know, one of the only other people that will get to see some scenery that we get to see. Pretty breathtaking, that's for sure.
Those rivers, you've got these towering mountains and jungle-clad peaks that draw the rain, and then these beautiful, big, crystal-clear rivers full of the jungle perch and the sooty grunter. Aren't sooty grunter the most underrated sports fish that take a fly or a lure?
Oh, they're fun, that's for sure. And, yeah, for their size, they certainly do give you a bit of curry on the light gear.
They're good on the top, aren't they? They're really great on, I've caught them on little surface poppers, not far from your place, actually, in a beautiful little stream, a bit low down, actually. When I got back to the bridge, we walked up this crystal clear sandy stream with the big blue butterflies fluttering through the canopy and found a snag with a bit of a wash away, and it was full of grunter. And the big one,
yeah,
the big one takes first, and then the next size, and then next one up, and all on little surface flies. And their fight was just spectacular. It was such good fun. And then I got back to the car, and the farmer said, "Have a look over the other side of the bridge here, where you blokes have just been wading." And there was a slide with this huge crocodile footprints. And he said, "There's a croc that lives there." And he said, "Oh, he'd be about 18 foot long, but he's lost about 2 foot of his tail to a bigger one."
Wow.
So you gotta talk to the locals, Kimmy.
Yeah, definitely have to keep your wits about you up here, that's for sure.
Would you have spots though where you're pretty sure they're not, you know, when you get up into those high ranges that are right at the back of your place?
Yes. Considering that we do flood a bit though, you can never be too sure, in my opinion. And yeah, like there's no way that I'll be hopping in any water that I can't see the bottom without, you know, any murkiness or what have you. But yeah, I mean, obviously the higher you get, the less chance you're going to see them.
What are your tips for someone who wants to go to that area? Because it's just beautiful and the rainforest is spectacular. The streams are great. If they want to tangle with the rare and beautiful jungle perch,
definitely check out Google. Obviously, you know, the closer you are to main roads, you know, hopping in creeks and whatnot, the less chance you're going to find them. So you need to be going where people aren't going. That's probably why my biggest JP coming in at 45 centimetres. It was a 29-kilometre round hike. So,
And it's rugged. It's rugged terrain there and it's hot.
Oh, yeah. I was literally in tears on the way walking back to the car. But, yeah, like I said, the further you get away from when people are likely to be targeting JPs, the more likely you are to find ones and ones of good size.
And they really love the crystal clear, pristine rainforest streams that you've got in your backyard, the ones that aren't polluted or logged or full of farm chemicals and things.
Yes, definitely. Definitely love the crystal clear water and crystal clear running water. So they, yeah, don't mind, you know, perching themselves at the bottom of a waterfall and, you know, in fast flowing water. But they're definitely around here. So for JP fishing and sooty grunter, I use a 1K reel and a 1 to 3 kilo rod. So very, very light.
Lovely fishing with a little thousand and a beautifully balanced outfit. And surface lures, do you get them to come up to surface lures?
Yes, topwater is my absolute favourite. From the jungle perch right through to pelagics.
And Kimmy, I believe you're 100% land-based, which is pretty amazing there. Where do you do your estuary and shore fishing around Bibinda? Off the beach? Or how do you go about? Because I've seen some great photos on your socials of huge queenies and beautiful big trevally off, obviously, with your love of surface lures there. Very exciting fish. You know, how do you do that safely with the big crocs about?
Well, you definitely need to keep your distance from the water's edge. One place that I do frequent, you need to cross a little creek. Low tide, there's no issue. But yeah, you definitely don't want to be crossing creeks at high tide. I've crossed a creek once that was only, you know, 1 to 2 foot, and a very, very short time later, my peripheral vision, I caught, you know, something moving, and it was a great big crocodile that had come out of the creek that I'd just crossed.
That gives you the shivers. So you're pretty safe if you if you've got a decent outfit and you cast well back. If you're on the bank, you know, well back from the edge, is that the secret to being able to be a safe land based fisherman in Bibinda?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're fishing, if you're casting, you know, where there's drop offs, definitely keep your distance. I love my flats fishing. So, you know, you can see quite a few meters out into the water where it's still quite shallow. And, you know, only then I'll, you know, maybe venture a meter or two into the water. But apart from that, I do keep my distance from the water's edge. Yeah. And, you know, casting top water, well, casting anything really, you can cast out a considerable distance. So you're safe.
Yeah, and big tidal fluctuation there. How do you fish the tides for if you're, say, walking the beach and casting on the flats?
Yeah, so generally we'll head to the flats, you know, an hour or two before the bottom of the tide. And depending on what the next high tide is expected to be, you know, we might cast, you know, an hour to 2 hours of the incoming tide as well to be able to get back through the creeks and what have you safely.
Mm, and you just love the surface action. What sort of fish have you caught doing that? Because there's some beautiful beaches there where the rainforest meets the ocean, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. I love my queenfish. You know, some people don't particularly like them, but they're such a fantastic sports fish to target. And amongst those are your giant trevally as well, which I also love.
I bet you've been smashed up by a few, spooled by a few of those.
Yes, I've had my backside handed to me by a few GTs that would have been, you know, definitely round the meter mark. So, yeah, I'm still chasing that meter G.
Oh, it's a wonderful connection. It's great that there's this network of women anglers all over Australia with the Women's Recreational Fishing League and your LAD group, Ladies Anglers Down Under. I think it's got to the stage now where the women are just doing it for themselves and empowering each other. It's at a really good point at the moment, I think. And the tackle industry are cheering you on too, aren't they? Because they realise that if women can really take up the sport where they've been underrepresented, there'll be millions more casting a line.
Exactly. And we're fantastic shoppers.
Oh, yeah. Isn't shopping for tackle just the greatest thing?
Oh, it is. I'm pretty sure I'm nearly as bad, if not worse, than my partner when it comes to tackle and rods and reels. So,
yeah. It's just
tackle
great.
Tackle stores definitely should be loving the women, that's for sure.
Is there a local one in Bibinda?
Not Bibinda. The closest one is Innisfail. And then, you know, there's a few around Cairns as well.
Mm. And, yeah, great fishing, F&Q. And it's great that you're a land-based fisher. That's quite interesting for that part of the world. A lot of people wouldn't realise that you could do that. But if you're croc-wise, no problem. And I know you post a lot of stuff about being croc-wise as well, Kimmy. People need to really learn about that before they try to do what you do in your part of the world. Hey, great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too, Scott.
Really nice to connect. This is a really great movement at the moment. It's a good time for women in sport in general, but particularly women in angling. Kimmy Adams in Bibinda. Tight lines, Kimmy.
Thank you, Scott.
And many more surface smashes from giant meter plus queenfish.
Yes.
Went fishing last Sunday and I caught a smelt. Put him in the pan and the fire he felt. Of all the smells I ever smelt.
Well?
I never smelt a smelt like that smelt.
As the salmon swam up the river to spawn,
yeah,
he said to himself with a great big yawn,
ho, ho.
The next time this way.
I'm gonna make the trip in a Chevrolet. Oh.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.